Continuing the summary of the glossary, leading to the textbook's 18th and final chapter, Fruitage. Gordon Brown.
We were at the top of page 591, weren't we, with the definition of Lord God, and thinking of how Jesus presented the true idea of Lord and Master. In which case he also presented, of course, the true idea of man. That's 591, line 5. Man as the compound idea of spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Man as the compound idea of God is man, of course, in immediate communion with God and with his brother man. Man as the idea of spirit, which is the subjective state of mind or God, is therefore the opposite of man as matter. Line 8, the subjective state of mortal mind, which is mythology. Matter, the myth that life passes from death to life, that mind originates in matter. That which mortal mind sees, feels, hears, tastes, and smells only in belief. Line 15. Whereas mind itself, the next term to appear, mind, capital M, is not that which is in man, line 18, but the divine principle or God of whom man is the full and perfect expression, as we've just seen. Making mind the only I or us. Line 16, as in the definition, of course, of I or ego a moment ago. Now note the fundamental order of terms in this definition of mind. Mind itself, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Mind, needing all the other terms to define it, just as the first day of creation holds within it all six of the subsequent days. Otherwise, of course, no unfoldment. Humanly speaking, mind as deity outlines the human picture, but isn't outlined by it. And therefore, there appears humanly the phenomenon known as the miracle. Line 21. That which is divinely natural, a divinely natural phenomenon of science. Although from the human standpoint, it has to be learned. Divinely, the miracle of science is natural to us, but humanly, we have to learn it. And we do this, of course, through continuous breaking of new, now we come to the next term, morning light. 9:23. Which is the appearing to us of, says the text, the symbol of truth. Remember how spiritual teaching must always be by symbols? Learning science through enlightening symbols. There's constant revelation and progress. It's always morning. Chasing away the darkness of now the next term, mortal mind, line 25. Revealing, that is to say, the nothingness of mortal mind, because mind is immortal. Revealing that, like its subjective state, matter, mortal mind, is mythology. Error, fallen man, creating other errors. Other fallen men. So that man appears as the offspring of mortals. 592.5. Through the belief of more than one creator. Constituting the different subjective states of error, mortal mind does not exist in science, because there, of course, there's no error. Well, Israel in the Old Testament had to learn these things. And who was her teacher? Moses, 592.11. The name Moses, meaning to draw out of the water, just like the meaning of the word educate, to lead out, to draw forth. Moses, Israel's motherly leader, her educator, her disciplinarian, and a type of the instructional Christ itself. Through his moral courage, he taught her to demonstrate the moral law. But Mosaic law and justice, says the text, has to be united to the gospel of affection in order for there to be spiritual wholeness. Because the law of thou shalt not brings penalties to those who break it. Well, the mothering quality in Moses foreshadows, of course, the motherhood of Mary Baker Eddy, although in the case of the latter, justice and affection are united. And therefore the motherhood of Mary Baker Eddy reflected the motherhood of God. Was, in fact, God as mother, line 16, in action. Israel's, man's, real mother and educator is God, operating as the creative, that's the Eloistic, principle, life, truth, and love of the days of creation, divine and eternal, 9:16-17. And these are the first four terms, aren't they? Principle, life, truth, and love, that appear in the Christ translation order, the workings of which Moses' ascents and descents of God's holy mountain prefigures. The motherhood of God reduces the law of God to the humanly comprehensible system of the moral law. That is to say, it reduces divine science to the system of Christian science, so that New Jerusalem, the next term in the order, the holy city, the mother of us all, as divine science, the spiritual facts and harmony of the universe, the kingdom of heaven, or reign of the harmonious relationships of all things with all things, is set up on earth in the form of Christian science. So that just as we read in the description of the holy city in the Apocalypse chapter, there shall be no night. Line 21, the next term, there. No darkness, ignorance, doubt, or fear. Only science, or the knowledge of God. In other words, the coming of the mother or matrix city, New Jerusalem, is the coming of the Holy Comforter that shall teach us all things, as symbolized in the early chapters of Genesis by the coming of Noah. Next term. Remember how it's said of Noah? The same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. And so the Comforter, first translation, teaches us knowledge of the nothingness of material things, first degree, and of the immortality of all that is spiritual, third degree, provided, that is, that the oil, now onto line 25, of consecration, charity, gentleness, prayer, heavenly inspiration is present in us, and not the self-righteousness, line 27, of the Pharisee. The Pharisee whose hypocrisy masks on the surface the animal magnetism or lust that's going on underneath. And this means to say that the oil of consecration to the Comforter causes us to turn from Pharisaical hypocrisy to the meaning of the first of the four Eden rivers, the word river, Pison, the top of 593, which is the love of the good and beautiful and their immortality. Because what the mother teaches us, of course, is divine principle. 593.3, in contrast to personal sense. And principle, if we turn as we are bidden there to recapitulation 465, is the understanding, of course, of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, whereby principle, God, and its idea, man, is one, and this one, all God. As a result of which, each of us becomes individually a prophet, a spiritual seer, line 4. Material sense, first degree, disappearing, second degree, before the conscious facts of spiritual truth, third degree. Because the prophet, unlike the Pharisee, and also unlike Judas Iscariot, does not hold on to the purse, line 6, does not lay up treasures in matter, but treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be, also says Jesus. He who lays up treasures, that is to say, a purse for himself, is not rich towards God. Just like the false teacher in the teaching chapter, you remember, he cares only for the fees. And therefore, he's in the pay of the red dragon, isn't he? The next term to appear. The red dragon, error, fear, inflammation, sensuality, subtlety, animal magnetism, and so on. From which state of thought there just must be resurrection. Line 9. In order to be rid of all that stuff, thought must become spiritualized. Material belief must yield to spiritual understanding and a new and higher idea of immortality or spiritual existence must appear. Otherwise, we'll find ourselves back in the position of Jacob's first son, Reuben, which is in a state of corporeality, sensuality, same term that defines the red dragon up there. Delusion, mortality, error. Showing, of course, the need for thought to be gathered into its proper channels for development. To be like the tree of life, fertilized by those four Genesis rivers. So that like a river, river the next term, line 14, like a river, it flows smooth and unobstructed along the course of truth. Not muddy, foaming, dashing like a river of error. Because now it is that thought is founded on the rock Christ, on spiritual foundations of truth itself, wherein there's no coldness, no stubbornness. A rock in science isn't something hard, inflexible, unyielding, dogmatic, but flows. A rock that flows as the river of the water of life, and as such, the means of salvation. Line 20, becoming to us life, truth, and love, understood and demonstrated as supreme over all, sin, sickness, and death destroyed. which really means to say that the seal, next term, or signet of error, is revealed, uncovered, brought into the open by this rock of truth. Just as when, in Revelation, the Lamb of God unseals the seven time seals of the Bible or the Book of Life. And what he uses to do this, in the words of the fourth day of creation in Science and Health, is the seal of deity, which has the impress of heaven. Or in the words of Revelation, the seal of the living God, which seals in their foreheads the 144,000 who stand with him on Mount Zion. Well, these must surely be those who, according to miscellaneous writings, it's on page 358, those who heal by teaching and teach by healing, and therefore graduate under divine honors, which are the only appropriate seals for Christian Science. They are the body or church of Christ, built on the rock Christ, and show the human race to be a calculus of spiritual identities bearing the impress of this matrix rock that forms it. They don't bear the mark of the beast, the seal or signet of error, which is ignorance, as against knowledge or science. In other words, they are not the dupes of the Genesis serpent. 594, line 1, who becomes, as we know in Revelation, the red dragon itself, or animal magnetism. It's necessary, therefore, to handle animal magnetism first in the form of that serpent. Because the serpent is, says the text, the first statement of mythology, line 3, the first lie of limitation, the first audible claim, line 9, that God, good, isn't omnipotent, and that there exists another evil power. Well, those who do handle the serpent in this way, of course, follow in the footsteps of the Lamb of God as their leader, and so are his sheep. Line 12. The term that follows. Reflecting in themselves the Lamb's own innocence and inoffensiveness. Which really means to say they don't stumble at the rock Christ, the headstone of the corner, and find it to be a rock of offense. No, they're like Noah's son Shem, who comes next, with his kindly affection, with his love that rebukes error and reproves sensualism, just as does Jesus, who comes through the line of Shem. and who truly represents, now we come to the next term, line 16, the Son of God, the Messiah or Christ. Who is truly the Son of Man, capital S, that is the Son of Woman or generic man, and not the Son of Man, little s, which is the offspring of the flesh. He's the Son of a year, in the sense of the Son of eternity, but not the Son of time. And because of this, he's not concerned with souls, line 18 in the plural, personally possessed souls inhabiting mortal bodies, but with one soul, God, the soul of one entire Christ body, which is therefore the body of spirit, line 19 in the singular. Spirit, the substance of mind, of principle, of all that is good, perfect, everlasting, omnipresent, omnipotent, infinite. Precluding all possibilities that men can ever be a lot of separate, now the next term, spirits, line 22, having evil minds or intelligences of their own that make them gods, the opposite of God. Instead, individuals all reflect the substance, line 25, which according to Paul and as referred to in recapitulation, which we are asked to do there, the substance that mortals hope for, the substance of one soul, spirit, mind, the substance of truth, life, and love, as it says there on page 468 in recapitulation. Because in this case, men are like the woman in the apocalypse, clothed with the sun. The next term to be considered, 595, line 1. Clothed with the sun. The sun, the symbol of their one governing soul, wherein their identity is compounded of truth, life, and love. That's to say, they are the embodiment of truth or Christ, as it shines forth infinite life and love. If we say that the sun stands for God, then all his rays collectively stand for Christ, and each separate ray for men and women. Remember that in Miscellany 344, we look back for a moment to page 538 in the Genesis chapter, we should see how the sun itself, S-U-N, stands for this very life and love, this womanhood, or tree of life, while truth is the sun shining itself forth as the sword of true manhood. Remember it? Which turns every way to keep the way of its own womanhood or the tree of life. And therefore the next term we come to is sword. 595, line 3. Manhood, guarding the sanctity of his own womanhood, which is his own unity with the Father, Mother, God, as, therefore, the very idea of truth. Line 3. It's in this that all true justice lies, free from revenge or anger, such as would seek to slay Cain with the sword, as if Cain were some thing, rather than merely ignorance. And it's a two-edged sword, isn't it? Whereby the tares of mortality, the term that follows, the tares of mortality, error, sin, sickness, disease, death, are separated from the wheat of immortality and truth, enabling humanity to reach the true idea of temple or body. Line 7. Not as a tempus time proposition, not as a thing of organic life, a material superstructure where mortals congregate for worship. Line 9. But as the idea of life, substance, and intelligence. You see the combining of the capitalized and uncapitalized terms together there. The superstructure of truth, the shrine of love. A superstructure, something that appears above ground, built on foundations. Now, science's foundations are truth and love, aren't they? Which, together with the superstructure built upon them, make up the structure itself of truth and love. The definition, do we remember, of church. And so these two body symbols, temple and church, begin to appear in relationship to one another and lead inevitably to the next term from the Old Testament, Thummim. Thummim, that state of perfection, of human and divine unity, eternally demanded by divine science, line 12, in order that in the temple or body, there is true priestly communion with God. No veil of time or matter separating man from God or the human from the divine in divine science. And therefore the Urim and Thummim, which were to be on Aaron's, that's the high priest's, breast when he went before Jehovah, were holiness and purification of thought and deed, which alone can fit us for the office of spiritual teaching. 9:16. And so, in the story, the priest, the true identity of Levi, remember the definition of Levi, passes through the veil of the next term, time. 9:17. Into a state of immediate, that is timeless, communion with God. All of us have to do it, don't we, in order to be taught Christian science properly of God. Which means to say that nothing in our experience can rightly be measured mortally, but that all human acts, 18, thoughts, beliefs, opinions, knowledge, and so on, must continue to disappear in a process of scientific translation until spiritual perfection, symbolized therefore by the Thummim, appears. And now, to this end, we all contribute something. What do we contribute? Our tithe, or tenth part. Next term. Not as a sacrifice to the gods, but in homage and gratitude to God, we sacrifice mortality. Just as the high priest, Aaron, is supposed to do with his Urim and Thummim. In keeping the first of the Ten Commandments, we give our allegiance to a tenth part of the commandments. Having no other gods, not being mortal gods, but having one God, and therefore cleansing ourselves of the uncleanness, next term, of impure, dualistic, polytheistic thoughts, with all their error, sin, dirt, and therefore of ungodliness, until there remains no ungodly opposition to the divine principle and its spiritual idea. Line 25. But clearly, in order to achieve this, God must not be unknown to us. 5:96:1, but known. Known in Christian science. Line 4. Science, sciere, to know. There must be as we've just been shown, direct priestly communion between idea and divine principle in the temple of life, truth, and love, with no separating veil in between. To be thus taught of God, to know God, is the opposite, isn't it, of ignorant worship. Line 9. The material sense of an unknown gives way to the spiritual sense of the known. Paganism and agnosticism yield to Christian Science, bringing God much nearer to man, making him better known as the all in all, forever near. Line 9, capitalized all and uncapitalized all, one in spiritual communion. In other words, consciousness, enlightened with the priestly Urim. Line 11. Same as with Urim and Thummim in the other reference. So that ignorance or the unknown disappears. But in order for spirit, the all, capital A, to be the illuminator, the teacher of all, little a, thought has to wear a 12-fold breastplate of holiness. Aaron wore it over his heart when he went before Jehovah. Communion with the Most High has to be heartfelt. Then the illuminations of science, line 15, symbolized by this Urim, or light, of 12 precious stones, all of them different, give us a sense of the nothingness of error, and show the spiritual inspiration. Think of it, the in-breathing of love and truth. In that order, love and truth, to be the only fit preparation for admission to the presence and power of the Most High. Line 19. This alone fits us, says the Thummim reference back on 595, for the office of spiritual teaching. Man taught of God and not of man, as in the 13th chapter of the textbook Teaching Christian Science. Because at that point of the 13th chapter, thought is illumined by the light of the preceding 12 chapters. He wears them over his heart. And therefore he's inspired by love and truth, by a calculus of ideas, truth, held in the matrix of love that forms it. God and man in instant, inseparable union. An illumined mountaintop communion with the Most High. line 19, in which there is no valley, line 20, of depression or darkness. So the next term is valley. Only the meekness that fears no evil, even when it seems to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The way, dark, unknown to mortal sense, illumined by life and love. Illumined by life and love, inspired by love and truth. So that the valley of the human experience now begins to bud and blossom as the rose. And all because, through the martyrdom and crucifixion of the mortal, exemplified, of course, in the martyrdom and crucifixion of Jesus, the veil, next term, line 28, of the temple has been rent in twain from top to bottom. So that there's no more skulking, cover-up, concealment, hiding, or hypocrisy. These are all now torn from the bigotry and superstition of superficial religion by divine science. 597, there, line 14, immortality and love. Which means that the sepulchre, the mortal sense of temple or body, is opened, and man is free to enter into unity with God, his divine origin, which the Bible as a whole reveals. No more separating veil, no more cloaked crime, to spring involuntarily into action and crucify God's anointed, the one most high priest, typified, of course, by Jesus, reveals the nothingness of veiled Pharisaical hypocrisy and the forever truth of generic man. The woman, all men, in self-conscious communion with God. Result? No more loneliness. No more wilderness. Line 22. In the sense of no more doubt and darkness dogging the footsteps of humanity, but rather the human experience one of the spontaneity of thought and idea, the human and divine one in coincidence. With an apparently separating veil removed, the only wilderness is a vestibule, wherein subject and object, inside and outside, divine and human, are one. That's to say, in which a material sense of things, first degree, disappears, second degree, in spiritual sense, unfolds the great facts of existence, third degree. and therefore the original myth of man supposedly possessing a will. The next term, line 20, of his own, in opposition to the will of God, line 22, is swallowed up in translation. There is no fallen man needing to enter through a separating veil into the presence of God in order to recover a lost position. This no longer obtains, this belief, once the Christly, not my will but thine be done, has proved the nothingness of division or death, has opened the sepulchre with divine science, and wrought resurrection for the human. The will of God, as quoted by Paul, as said by Paul in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, is that the human shall abstain from the fornicating belief of having a will of its own. The might and wisdom of the one mind God is that humanity shall realize its spiritual, not fleshly, origin. And to this end, in the words of Jesus, the wind, the term that follows, bloweth where it listeth, and so is every one that is born of the Spirit. Born, not of human or animal willpower, but of the will of God. Born of the movements of the might of omnipotence, the might and omnipotence of God's spiritual government encompassing all things, line 29, and proving the nothingness of the destruction, anger, mortal passions engendered by human willpower. At the crucifixion, when the veil of the temple was rent in twain, Jesus proved the nothingness of the fleshly birth-death cycle and the allness of the life cycle that comes from and returns to Spirit. He breathed his last, 598:14, took his last breath of matter and breathed instead only spirit, soul. This spiritual inspiration of love and truth, as we had it in the definition of Urim, admitted him to the presence and power of the Most High, so that in the words of Paul, he sat on the right hand of the Majesty on high. Imbibing, of course, only the wine. Next term, line 17, of understanding. Inspired only by spirit. The cup that all of us have to drink as we abstain from the wine of error, fornication, temptation, passion, and in so doing wash in the blood, the true wine of the sacrificial lamb, then death is no more. And the door opens into eternity, which in the term, the definition of the term that appears next, is the true understanding of year. 598.19. That spiritual understanding of life and love. So often this beautiful compound of the two terms, life and love, speak to us here, don't they? Which is a foretaste of eternity. That understanding of the science of being, says the text, bridging over with life discerned spiritually the interval of death, so that man is in the full consciousness of his immortality and eternal harmony, where sin, sickness, and death are unknown. Why? Because now God is known. Science. Time, divided and measured in terms of solar years, yields to eternity as God's measurement of soul-filled years. The only sun, the only solar, is soul. That which in truth clothes the woman, generic man, the human race. A 1,000-year periods of time sealing the Bible, concealing the revelation of the spiritual origin of man, have been opened by the timeless days of creation. The wind or spirit of God having moved on the waters of human consciousness and formed man in the image of God. Nothing finite. Everything infinite. And therefore, you, 599, line 3, my brother man, are not a corporeality over there, separated from me, another corporeality here. But together we constitute the body of the one Christ mind. Both having the same divine parent, both of the same spiritual origin. And therefore, that which animates, on line 4, our zeal for this wonderful life, truth, and love of ours isn't animal. 'tisn't blind enthusiasm or mortal will, but the fact that our individuality, life, is simultaneously compound truth and universal love. And therefore we and our universe dwell together in peace and unity and harmony of relationship in the holy four square city of Zion, line 6, the final term of the glossary. Our spiritual foundation and superstructure, constituting what we and our universe are, as the fullness of the structure of truth and love, the church or body of Christ, heaven and earth, matrix calculus, one and indivisible, heaven on earth. From this truth of timeless, deathless unity comes all our bodily inspiration, line 6, all our bodily strength. Earth not without form and void, no more void, no more emptiness, line 7, unfaithfulness, desolation, but filled, as Paul would say, with all the fullness of God. For in him dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily. In him Christ the head, and therefore in us man the body, dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead, of the capitalized mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, word, Christ, Christianity, science, bodily. And therefore, from the Alpha to the Omega, or from the A to the Z, the terms selected from the Bible as a whole to constitute the glossary, the 17th chapter of Science and Health, begin to synchronize and flow together coherently. And as we let them do this more and more in an articulate, could we say, symphonic way in our understanding, the note they consistently sound is undoubtedly that of man's spiritual origin, isn't it? The key to the scriptures in Science and Health. Genesis, the Apocalypse, and Glossary interpret the scriptures in their true sense, which, says Science and Health on page 534, reveals the spiritual origin of man. End of recording of Glossary. Please turn the tape over for fruitage.